Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for September 22nd, 2022, in the ongoing year-long series of the history of the discoveries of my work. And this week I'll be talking about water filtration and how that got into my life and how this all began and where it went. And so I'll also cover this up to close to the current time because it's a continuing story. It's a business that I've been in for, at this point in the year 2022, now for about 22 years. And so it grew and it grew. It's one of those things that just kept growing and eventually got to the point where now I have my own manufacturing, my own product line, my own proprietary products, etc. And the latest technologies, they're just light years ahead of what anybody else is selling out there. Typically in the water filtration industry or in the water softener industry, which is parallel, somewhat misconstrued by many companies trying to sell their water softeners as water filters. But be that as it may, it's an industry which has a lot of misinformation, a lot of products that really don't do what they're so the people say they're supposed to do, etc. But primarily very old technology. If you look at water softeners, this technology has been around since I was a kid, where you take a big tank with a little hole on top and you have resin in there and you have a tube that goes all the way down into this tank and the water goes down and it filters through this resin and removes minerals and things like that. It's a old technology. And I remember that when I was a kid, the water softener guy would come and I'd have to go down and let him in. And he'd roll in with his little two-wheel cart, a new tank. And I don't remember how often they came to the house, every month or 2 months or whatever it was, 6 months, I don't even remember. But they'd roll in a new tank, unscrew the couplings, put on the new tank, and then out the door they went till the next time. And so that business and the techniques, the physical part of the system has really not changed for all of that time. And so now you have brine tanks, the tanks are a little bit smaller, but basically, that those are the original water softeners. And then when I was a kid, the water was pretty pure. Let's just put it that way. I mean, the Industrial Revolution had not come yet out to the farming communities. The farmers were still using what would you call it, green techniques, what you would with organic farming, where they would spread the cow manure on the fields, and this was not laden with chemicals. They did not feed the cows or the chickens or the barn animals. They did not feed them chemicals. And so there were no chemicals that were going into the water table. So it was really very pure, very pure environment. But then eventually, of course, all of these things changed and the small industries that were in little towns, for example, started polluting, and without, and then eventually the Environmental Protection Agency came in and started making regulations and every now and then would fine somebody. But just to give you a little story, when I was a kid, I had an uncle who was quite well-to-do. They lived up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And they had the husband and wife. My uncle was my dad's side, so anyway, husband and wife and two daughters. And the two daughters played the piano, went to college, went on to get advanced degrees. They were quite well off. And we were poor. We were like the poor members of the family. My dad did not make a lot of money. We always had good food and, clothing and things like that. I wore a lot of clothes, secondhand clothes when I was growing up, just because that's the way it was, and that was fine. I mean, we were warm. We had good food. But the idea was that the environment was very clean. It was a very clean environment. But for my uncle and his wife and the two daughters, though, there was a company up in the suburb of Minneapolis that was it was a creosote company, and they were taking the creosote, I don't know, some byproduct or whatever, and they just had a big hole they had dug down into the ground in the middle of this factory, and they would dump the residue down that hole, and it got into the water table. And then all of a sudden, all these people started getting cancer in this region. So they started looking around, and lo and behold, they find this creosote company dumping all of this pollution into the ground, and that's what caused all these people to get cancer and eventually died. My uncle died, my aunt died, the older daughter, I forget, it was the younger daughter, I think, that actually died of cancer. The older one had a real serious bout with cancer, but it made it through. So anyway, that's where my first recognition or first understanding of this issue of companies polluting, etc. And then it was about my age group of people, all of my friends that had farms, they, you know, because it was a farming community, a lot of kids in the high school were from farms, etc. And they used just primitive farming techniques. That group of people, if they wanted to go on in farming, they were encouraged to go to the university and learn about modern farming techniques where they used chemicals, and that's where Monsanto came in and Roundup and Roundup Ready crops and all of this modern technology, which turned out to be Frankenstein technology. But that's where it came from, and that's where the pollution in the groundwater really started. And then you had growth in industry, you know, if you were in, say, Detroit or those eastern cities, Cincinnati, they had been polluting since the turn of the century when the iron ore would come in on the ships and they would bring in coal and run the generators to smelt the metal and then making the car industry, the steel industry, etc. Two world wars where all the steel and aluminum were smelted, etc. And then you have places like St. Louis, where you had the refining of uranium from the Manhattan Project in St. Louis, and there were other places in the U.S., where then they would take the trailings and just go out and dump them in a dump yard, uranium. And so you have uranium in the water systems. This is an end result of World War II, where, you know, there were, you know, you were, the goal was to win the war. And to heck with the pollution, who would think about that when there was a world war to be won? And so anyway, now the people living there are still dealing with this. I had a guy I knew there, had a farm outside of St. Louis, and all of his animals would die because of uranium poisoning. There's places up in Oregon where they were mining uranium, and they would take it and spread it out over the land. And to this day, the military, especially the U.S. military, is the worst offender in the world. They say is the U.S. military is the worst polluter in the world because they, you know, they will take a nuclear reactor from a ship that's used and they'll take it out to the middle of the ocean and dump it down in some deep crevice in the middle of the ocean or spent fuel rods, put it in a container, and eventually that's going to break. Someday that's going to break those fuel rods and they're going to pollute the ocean and kill off animals. And good grief, you know, this has been going on. So in my lifetime, literally, water pollution has become a huge issue. And so the way this began is when I started this radio show that I'm on right now. It was WWCR Nashville, Tennessee, Thursday evening, 6 p.m., I have been on this time now for 22 years, week in, week out, very rarely missing, maybe a few times. You can count them on one hand, the number of times I've missed this weekly show in all of these years. And the way it started, I was on, I had a producer that I would have to call in, and we would do the live show, and he would record it and then post the archives. And so those archives were produced in a real radio format. They're still on my webpage. So all of my radio shows are archived. But the method of paying for the airtime came from selling water filters. It was a deal that was set up, and I was like, okay, whatever. And so I started selling water filters. And it was also right at the time the year 2000 was the time of the so-called millennium bug. I've talked about this before in this year's anthology. And the millennium bug was an alleged issue that was going to happen with all computers that were Windows-based, that somehow these computers would all cycle to zero because the millennium, it was the 1,000-year January 1st, between December 31st and January 1st at midnight, then all these computer registers would go to zero and then they wouldn't know what to do and all of the, you know, everybody was going to die, was the scenario. And so water filter sales started to boom where people were preparing. And this was the beginning of the so-called prepper movements where people were preparing. And even back in the Vietnam War era, people were not preparing. They weren't planting gardens. They were not buying, you know, non-GMO seeds. They were not, you know, some people were, but not as a national trend. But this all began with that millennium bug issue. And I remember I was working in a telecommunications company at the time, and we all had to work. We all had to work. And that night, because the end of the world was coming, and literally nothing happened. And that's what I had said too to the company management. I said, there's nothing going to happen. Computers do this all the time. There's no bug. There's no crash. There's nothing going to happen with computers. But anyway, be that as it may, the sale of water filters, these gravity water filters that set up on your counter, was a going concern at the time. And so anyway, that's how the radio station had set up to sell water filters, and a number of people who were on that station, some of them, I believe, still there today, some of the big old names that were around back then were still here today, still doing radio shows from WWCR. It's the biggest radio station in the world. It is the 4 100,000-watt channels that broadcast in shortwave, transmit around the world. And I've been in many different places in the world monitoring my own show that is on the shortwave radio station in airing, and then, of course, other people's radio shows from the same station. But anyway, that's how I got started in the water filtration business. And then eventually, I sold the certain types of water filters, and I'm not going to mention names going back and forth. But eventually, I started selling a Dalton water filter, which was the original one. The Dalton water filter, now, just to give you an idea, this is about water filtration, this entire discussion and how I came into this. The Dalton company, and I think it was back in the 1800s, and the river Thames in England was getting more and more polluted. And so there was an issue that people were getting sick. And so, interestingly enough, there was the Dalton family. They were producing ceramic yard ornaments, and these were popular in England. You would put these, like it would be a ceramic of a goose or maybe a farm animal or something like that, and people would put them in their little gardens. Everybody in England at the time had a little garden around their house. And so these ceramic objects were very nice. And so anyway, this Dalton guy noticed that the water from the river that was filtered through these ceramic pieces that he was making was potable. In other words, you could drink it. It would filter out the whatever was in the water that was making people sick. So he started producing a ceramic water filter container where you would pour the water in. It would filter through the container, drip down into another container, and very simply would make a water filter that was potable. Okay, so at any rate, then eventually they refined the technique, and then into the 19, and I'm not really sure when this modification occurred, but they started making the original Dalton filter element, which is a ceramic and had a basically made on a fitting, and of course ceramics are baked, so it's baked in an oven. And then the Daltons went to India, and of course India was related to England, and that's where, from my knowledge anyway, the first stainless steel containers were made. And many of them still are made today. And of course, I sold stainless steel containers throughout the years. I don't anymore because of the issues with shipping and stocking and all of that. And I've moved on to bigger fish to fry with the whole house water filter, et cetera. I still sell the replacement filter elements for the standard size stainless steel gravity filters, etc. But anyway, back to the Daltons, because back in the 1800s, because of their efforts to clean up the water and solve the issue with health, what they did is they received the Royal Seal on their product, which it still holds. And so in England, the Daltons have an exclusive, which was granted by the Queen to say you made good wheels for wagons or something like that, you would be granted the Royal Seal, and nobody else could duplicate your products because it was basically granted by the Queen. There's no higher authority in England than the Queen, as you probably well know, even today. But at any rate, around the year 2000, that's when other companies got in the works, and I'm not going to mention names here, because I probably sold quite a few of these different types of filter in my own history. And of course, then around the millennium bug this year, 2000, when I started selling, people came in with different variations of the filter element. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is go through a little bit of the evolution of my own product line in relation to other product lines, etc. And so around the year 2010, there was a flood in Iowa, and I took variations because by this point I was selling ceramic filters. And at this point, the ceramic filters were hollow inside. There was no medium in the middle, and that was the original Dalton design. It was just a ceramic filter, nothing more. Eventually, the company started putting a medium in there, and that medium was designed to extract chemicals that were in solution in the water, and that design still holds today. So there's variations on that. But anyway, and I was also selling these black filters, which were basically manufactured or cut out of a single piece of what appears to be, I guess the closest thing you could describe it was sponge-like packing foam. That's the closest thing that you can describe to somebody that's not familiar with these. But it's a material that is hydrophobic. In other words, it repels water. And that required that you would prime these filters, pumping water backwards through them to get them started. And there was a couple issues with that. One was that you would contaminate the inside of the filter before you ever started using it, especially if you were in an emergency situation where you're going to get clean water to pump backwards through your filter if you're just setting up your water filter. And the other issue is that the water then would go in and impregnate the filter, but only in a few places. It wouldn't be 100%. So then when you started using the filter, only a few places in the filter would the water be passing through. So there were some issues with that kind of a filter where you had to prime it. The term is priming it, where you pump water backwards through the filter. Okay, so anyway, there was this flood in Iowa, 2010, springtime. And so I go down to the flooded area and I said, I'm going to take my water filter and I'm going to test out these filter elements and see which ones work, which ones don't, or which limitations. And I'm going to test these water filters. So anyway, I take the ceramic, and this is just pouring raw flooding water into this filter. I eventually built a pre-filter, which was then designed. It was a big container that was a plastic container that sat up on top of the stainless steel water container. And it had a great big coffee filter papers in there, you know, the kind of paper you put in a coffee filter. And then I had diatomaceous earth and a medical grade activated charcoal that I put in there as a pre-filter with a couple layers of these great big coffee filter papers. And I sold that. I sold lots and lots of those. And eventually that became a discontinued product because of that was just difficult to get. And I did not, well, I sold a lot of them, but not as many as I would have liked to sell. But at any rate, that was for a flooding situation, for a pre-filter. But anyway, at this time in 2010, I'm just pouring, you know, unfiltered, raw flood water into the water filter. And what happened was the black manufactured, looked like packing foam type of filter would plug up, and there was no way to clean it. You could scrape it, you could take any kind of sharp knife or something on it and try and scrape it off, and it just completely plugged it up, completely, because the silt is very, very fine, and it goes in and it plugs everything up. However, the ceramic filter was very easily cleaned. You just scrape off the outer layer, put it back in. In fact, you didn't even have to remove the filter element. You just cleaned it off, rubbed it off even with your hand, and it would start working again. So clearly, for emergency, the ceramic filter went out, and then there were some other issues with the black filters, and at that point, I stopped selling those. And I went strictly to ceramic filters. The ceramic filters originally had a hollow in an internal core. Then they went to a medium in the middle, which was basically a charcoal-based medium. And then those mediums improved over time to take in more and more materials. Eventually, I name-branded my own product line, which was the JMCC Water Filters product line, and I sold those for probably about another 8 to 10 years, probably close to 10 years from 2010, maybe, let's just say, round numbers up to about 2020. And so I had my own name brand filter product line, etc. And then what happened is as I started to grow and as I started to have more orders, etc., I was not able to get the product. So that was just an issue where I would be behind on orders, sometimes 2 or 3 months, and it was, you know, a real problem filling orders, etc. And I said, okay, I can't continue with this, because the manufacturing was always behind, and they, you know, would run out of raw materials and be late on this, and this was missing, and it just was. And plus the baking, the manufacturing process for making the filters was just too complicated, etc. And so I said, okay, this is going to end. I'm going to go out and research the industry. And I'll just say in round terms, this probably started around the year 2020. And I started searching for the latest technologies, started looking to, and then also here's something that I was becoming disenchanted with the sink filters and the gravity countertop filters, because the big issue with water was in the shower. This is something I realized, a major revelation. And by the way, I'll just say something also, that on my 50th birthday, which would have been, I'm not going to date myself, but I'll just say that clearly I'm older than 50, but on my 50th birthday, I went out and I got the equivalent of a nursing degree, because I wanted to learn about health. I didn't want to become involved in medicine or anything else. For my own well-being, I wanted to learn about health. And so I went to night school for 2 years and learned about health. So I have my physics degree in nuclear solid-state physics. I have all the work that I've done in science and space science, etc. But I was not healthy. I didn't feel like I knew anything about health or about my own body. So anyway, that's why I did that. And that was beneficial when I got to understanding the issues of water. And there are doctors out there that when a patient goes to them and says, I'm sick, I got this ailment or something, something's wrong with me, the doctor says, go drink a lot of clean water. But the problem is the water today is polluted everywhere. The United States is water is filthy. And you have the Environmental Protection Agency. I call them the Environmental Pollution Agency, because what do? They give out a license to pollute. They tell an industry, you can pollute so much this year and it's okay. And year after year, decade after decade, that industry pollutes. And now we have a problem with PFAS chemicals. These are called forever chemicals. They were used in Hush Puppy shoes. So you have a place like up in Vermont, a little sleepy town where these shoes were manufactured, and the company is pouring this residue of these PFAS chemicals into the water table, and now the water tables are polluted. They were using it in fertilizers where they took it out and spread it on farm fields, and now those farm fields cannot grow crops because there's so much PFAS chemicals in them. It's a horrendous problem. And these chemicals are to the point where part per trillion, will affect people, especially pregnant mothers, nursing mothers, little babies, etc. And so it's a horrendous situation because the Environmental Protection Agency did not protect you. They set up standards for water, so you go to your municipal water supplier, and they'll say, we meet federal EPA standards. They are terrible. The standards are just not even there. They do not address the issues. And then the EPA comes out and says, we are testing for PFAS chemicals. There's over 9,000 PFAS chemicals that have been used in industry. The EPA is only testing for 26 of them. And even of those, they're only testing for two or three on a large scale. Absolutely no follow-up. Recently, it was discovered that uranium and cesium and other elements from nuclear reactors are in the water tables in the United States, coming from the reactor meltdown in Fukushima, Japan. So anyway, my whole attitude, especially after Fukushima, knowing that these radioactive materials were in the water, etc., my whole attitude changed, and I started telling people, I said, okay, this gravity water filter is good. That's nice in the kitchen, but it's only for cold water. And then you have the hot water. You're washing dishes with your hands in that water. You're washing vegetables, and you're cooking with hot water that comes out, and none of that is filtered. So I started pressing for whole house water filtration, saying that the sink filters, the gravity filters are not enough in this modern age of high levels of pollution in water. Because the whole issue is that when you drink water or you use it in food or whatever, when you eat that food, your kidneys and your liver, etc., are filtering out toxins, etc., that are in the food, and they're getting rid of that. So it's a method of getting rid of these toxins, although you're polluting your liver and kidneys, etc. But when you're in a daily shower, you take a shower, and the water, the pollutants in the water go right through your skin into your bloodstream, and the same with breathing in the vapors. And so what I learned from my health and other studies and from just understanding the water filter industry and the pollution situation in water, actually, that's when I wrote the water ebook that's available. I send it out to everybody who puts an order in on my webpage. I send them a free copy of my book, Water, and talking about water pollution and the terrible state of water in the world today, etc. But the biggest issue was that your biggest dose of toxins comes in the daily shower. So you need a whole house water filter. So in my business, I said, okay, I want to concentrate on whole house water filtration, but there are no products there that I can sell that I can, number one, mass produce, fill large markets, and have a quality control where I don't have issues with a product once it gets out in the field. So anyway, this whole issue, I go out and I have to reinvent the wheel here. So I still want to sell the gravity water filters, etc. So I go out on a mission and I look at the latest technologies. I look at the manufacturing. I look at the manufacturing of stainless steel containers and the supply of stainless steel and how to make a consistent product all the way from the container to the filter elements, etc. And it takes me a while to put all of this together and get it up so that the manufacturing products are correct. and very good, high quality, the latest technology in the filter elements, and the everything else to fit together, all the seals, all of the, you know, everything from the thread and the fittings, everything that has to be done, and then to bring it up to a large-scale manufacturing point and bring it online and have distribution center where we can ship these around the country, and then people have them installed in their house, etc. So all I had to put all of this together because of literally a, what I would call a failed industry, an industry that did not meet the numbers, that did not meet the quality control necessary for large-scale production and distribution to the American public. So I went out and I did all of this, and like these came online in around the year 2021. And so the products, these are the products that I'm selling now. And the people love these products. That's just, you know, a very, very high quality. But I went to the latest technologies. So instead of ceramic, I went to other types of filtration technology in a two-system and a two-stage filter, which is the first stage is a fiber filter that is made up of ultra-fine fibers in a mat scenario where you layer up the mats and you get a very consistent filtration. So that's the first stage. It's a physical filtration. Then the second stage is a baked medium that removes the chemicals from the water. And this is based on the latest technology, removing the maximum number of and amounts of toxins that are in the water. So you have a physical filter for physical particles and then a chemical filter that removes particulate and chemicals, etc., that are in solution in the water at the atomic level. So this is the product line that I have right now. I'm very proud of it. It's capable of very high levels of manufacturing and not last and certainly not least is the fact that I can mass produce these for large markets. Highest quality, best product, lowest prices, mass produced for the mass markets, and better than any other product out there. Now, when I look at other product lines that are still out there selling, I don't sell on Amazon, I don't sell on eBay or any of these other outlets. I just sell through my own website and by word of mouth. And people tell people. I get that all the time. I bought these, I really liked them, and they tell all their friends. That's my best advertisement. And the more that I sell, the more people come in and buy these. And the other thing about my filters now is they have very high flow rate. So the whole house water filter is called the MR5 whole house water filter. It's a unique product. It is just, there's nothing like it on the market at all today. And especially with all the factors, the ability to mass produce it, the high quality once it gets out into the field, etc., etc. So I had to put a lot of time and money and thought and design work and searching for raw materials and understanding. And this is, by the way, developing in the time, the pre-COVID time frame, but then also having to maintain all of this during the COVID times and being supplied when my so-called competition could not get product. I'm getting product. And so I'm keeping things on the shelves, keeping a supply. I have next day shipping, something that I never had before. I had the products there that so when the people put in the orders, next day it was out in the shipping, etc. And like I say, maintaining quality control. A lot of things have to go into this, and then having the ability to ramp up to the next layer where the national markets start to kick in and being able to produce thousands and thousands of units per month. Whereas before, it was hard to get one unit every 2 months with the old technologies, etc. And even then, things would break in shipments. The ceramics had problems with breakage, with things being chipped, etc. It was just, you know, it was not going any place. So now Just like when I talked about last week about the wing generator, I had to take existing technologies, I had to write a specification on all the improvements that had to be made, and I had to go out and discover how to make those improvements all the way from the manufacturing, the supply chains, and then the distribution, and then the quality of the product and using the latest technologies. Anybody else out there is using at least 20-year-old technology. And the technology that I have now is absolutely cutting edge, light years ahead of anybody else, and in production. So anyway, I'm somewhat bragging here, but yes, the water filter industry is a big part of who I am today, my public visibility. And also, it's changed a lot because it's another field in which I've advanced far beyond competition. And these are big, big international companies in many cases that have been around for decades. And I'm light years ahead of them in a field that's totally independent from my electric nature of the universe, from my work on prime numbers, from the other archaeological work that I've done. And also, I'll just make the statement here that when I joined the Water Abundance X Prize, this was 2017 when that started, I had my wing generation company, the wing generator, the patents were applied for, they were in process. I had the marketing set up, the manufacturing, where it was mass production, manufacturing ready. And then I had my water filter company. But something that I added into the product line in 2017 was water from the air machines. These are machines that extract water from the air. Now, there again, you have many companies out on the international market building these, but they're basically an advanced air conditioner. It's a compressor, it's a set of plates, they extract water. And you know, when your air conditioner, the water's running out the side of it on a hot summer day, it's the same principle. But just that process alone is not enough. And the people who designed the Water Abundance XPRIZE knew the limitations of current technologies relative to energy and relative to water production from the air. So the goal was to produce water from the air, literally from the air that you breathe, and produce enough at an economical rate, and then also have the energy source to drive it. And when they picked their parameters for the prize, which was a $1.5 million prize, they set it about 10 times higher than anybody's equipment was capable of doing in the day. And when they started the prize. So it was a challenge that was literally beyond anybody's wildest dreams at the time. And I was able to accomplish that. And literally the only one that came out the other end with the energy source and with the ability to extract water from the air. So my water from the air machines, just a little comment, there was another group that came in at the end of that, of people who understand the whole story there. And they were not a finalist, but were given the final $1.5 million prize. I got a consolation prize of a nice chunk of money, but also was nowhere near enough to cover my expenses. But I'll talk a little bit about being in the XPRIZE. I joined it in 2017, and there was an initial phase where you had to build a scale model, which I did, and then I got accepted as one of the five finalists. Out of 98 teams, I was one of five finalists. And so these were groups from around the world, and when it came down to the final counting, at the end where they were going to start to judge the final products that were full scale, I was the only one left. I was the only team left standing. And then there was another team brought in. Anyway, that, I'm not going to dwell on that, but the issue was that they were extracting water from a shipping container, and from burning wood and then converting the wood and then the water that was in the wood, extracting that from the air that was inside a shipping container. So one could argue, or one could proposed that that is really not the spirit of what was proposed, extracting water from the air and making it available to the public, and then using a source of energy that was green. And so one would then again question, is burning wood a green source of energy? My source of energy was from the wind, using the wind generator. But anyway, be that as it may, I'm not going to dwell on that. That's all history. But it, in the to a, about a year and a half of the time that it took to do this, from early 2017 up until October of 2018, when the prizes were given out, I spent pretty much 100% of my time working on that. I set up a research station on a remote tropical island and was working on this on a daily basis. And not only did I have to overcome all of the hurdles of getting things shipped to the islands and everything in place, etc., but the one thing that was good is there was a deadline. The one thing good about things like a competition like this is there are deadlines, and you have to meet those deadlines. So I was working full time on this because I knew I had the only solution that really would work, because I had the energy component, and that's what nobody else had. Everybody had some kind of machine that extracted water from the air, but there again, I had machines that extracted water from the air that were much more efficient, about 25% to 50% more efficient than anything else that was on the market. And then also the use of electricity. I had some techniques where there was a very resourceful engineering feat to use much less electricity to extract water from the air. And of course, there are physical limitations, because the conversion of water vapor into water, liquid water, is a set chemical amount of energy. You cannot change, as Scotty used to say on Star Trek, I cannot change the laws of physics. But you can do things to help out these primitive systems that were just like an air conditioner. And so anyway, I had the wing generator combined with the water from the air machines, and those set off on an entirely different market that would never existed before, prior to that. But in the middle of the XPRIZE, the location where I was, well, you probably guessed by now, it was in Hawaii. I had a research station set up there, rented some property from a person in a good wind area with all of the, you know, the very good conditions for what I had to do, but in a very remote place, which made it very difficult. But there was a major earthquake. There was a major volcanic eruption that went off. Kilauea, the major, the most active volcano in the world, erupted. And there was a major shutdown of transportation on the island. There were two hurricanes, major hurricanes, that came up and around the island and shut everything down, including shipping, that I needed to bring my materials in. Because these are materials, these are big equipment, they come in big shipping containers, and et cetera. So this was a huge effort, a huge financial effort, et cetera. And then to come down to be the very last person standing was a major accomplishment, given all of the hurdles, given all of the physical difficulties. And so it's a very important feather in my cap, being the finalist in an XPRIZE, because that's a very elite group of people. Now, this is not something that you do because of political favors or anything else. This is international judges coming in and judging based on accomplishments, physical accomplishments on the ground, boots on the ground, etc., and meeting specifications that were set up, very strict criteria, and meeting it every week. Every week there were reports that had to be sent in, videos of the latest updates, etc. So it was extremely demanding. But then look at the people that have won X Prizes: Bert Rutan, Richard Branson. These are people who are in the very small elite group of X Prize finalists and winners. And so I'm an alumni on that. You can see my write-up about this Water Abundance X Prize, and also an alumni. And so I get to have a special communication with that group of people. And there again, that's very important, because that lives on And that's a very important part of my achievements. I would rank that up there because it's very visible. And not only is it very visible, it's something that's completely separate from all of my other scientific work and mathematical work and archaeology, etc. Something that's completely separate. Okay, so that's the Water Abundance XPRIZE. And there are other things that I've done relative to XPRIZEs and other engineering feats which are still going on today, some of them of which you will probably see emerging within the next year, which I can't talk about because they are in development at this point in time. But, okay, so anyway, back to the water filter. So the water filter company, so it was the water filter company that I used to build the business of the water from the air machines. They're actually, the industry term is AWG, Atmospheric Water Generators, AWG. That's the industry buzz term for those types of machines. And I've even made advancements over the machines I used in the XPRIZE that get the water, more water production out of the same machines. It's just like any machine. It's like an automobile where you make a more efficient automobile. There are techniques, there are things that you do, there are things that engineering accomplishments that people notice. Well, if you do this, you get a much more efficient automobile. And in the terms of the atmospheric water generators, if you do this, you get a much more efficient water generation package. And so, by the way, I'll just mention, people might be wondering, these are relatively expensive to implement, but in a place, what I have then is a package where you can take the wing generator and the atmospheric water generators to any place on Earth and generate water and electricity with no infrastructure. So very important technology, and this will be used in time as time goes on. It will be used, and you'll be seeing this more and more. But it also leads into other technologies. As I said, these will be things that you'll see in the future because energy and water are the two biggest issues on the planet, and that's what I want to switch to right now. So I brought you up to date with the water filter business, but look at the top 10 problems in the world. The top problem in the world is energy. The second and not very far behind, if not equal, problem in the world is water. That these two issues are the main problems in the world. If you can solve those, you can then solve other problems in the world, like food. How do you grow food without water? You can take the driest place in the desert. If you add water, you can grow anything there. There should be nutrients in the sand, and with adding fertilizer, etc. If you have a local community in Africa that's in a dry desert area, if they can have water, then they can produce food, and they can use the animal, the fertilizer from the animals, etc., from the manure from animals, or even human manure, if it's properly treated, can be used to grow crops. It's just that you can't use it raw. You have to treat it, and then it can be used as a very excellent fertilizer for crops. And so these cycles, you can build up the land, but you need water. And you also need energy to move things, to move products, to process products once they're produced, and then store them to dry them out for long-term use. And that takes electricity and energy. And then you need transportation. And in the modern world, you need the internet. You need other things like, say, motorbikes, electric motorbikes, electrical cars, electrical transportation. And these are all things that come out of naturally out of the work that I did. I'm also a vendor for one of the largest electric car charging station companies on the planet, and can sell those with the wing generator. You can heat your house. Imagine a cold house in the middle of a very far northern climate. On a windy night, with the wing generator, converting that wind into heat energy to heat your house. And the windier the house is, the windier the night air is howling outside, the more energy you need to heat your house. And I know that because I've spent a good deal of time in very cold climates, sometimes in a cabin that just had a little heater. And on the windy nights, it's taking the heat right out of the cabin. And so having a heat system that converts wind into heating energy would be a major issue. And then all you have to do is put a little money into insulation. And on a night when there is no wind, then you're not going to have the wind energy generation, but you're not going to have that heat loss due to the wind. So it's kind of proportional. So heating a house with wind is a very good idea. Now, one last point here. We're heading into an era where electric vehicles are coming online. That's something that I believe is in the future. That's great. And I also believe that hydrogen is going to be a very big component of transportation in the future. It's the highest energy content fuel that is known to man, much higher than gasoline, etc. But the issue is that gasoline is already, the infrastructure is already there. So, but the question is, the United States and developed countries, look at Europe, look at England, look at other Australia, other developed countries, China, they don't have the electrical generation infrastructure to double their electrical output with the requirement of electric vehicles as the number of electrical vehicles grow. Today, we don't have enough electrical vehicles on the highway to really start noticing that they're taking energy away from the grid. Pretty soon, states like California, they're going to have more and more electric vehicles. I forget what year it is after this coming year. They cannot sell diesel trucks anymore in California. They all have to be electric. And so anyway, where's the electricity going to come from? Nobody in these electric power companies, nobody is building infrastructure. It's certainly not going to come from solar. It's certainly not going to come from three-blade wind turbines. There's only one solution, and that is the JMCC wing generator. Then we have the issue with water. We have there's an issue where the farmers are growing crops with water that is polluted. Even water that comes out of the air in the form of rain is polluted. But the form of farming, the style of farming, is going to change to very high concentrated farming. And so also, as one of my product lines, I picked up the product line of the what I call the grow towers. Vertical grow towers, they have a little basin with water and the solution of ingredients that are for, they're not fertilizers, they're mineral bases. And it's the same mineral base that plants need when they grow in the ground. But in the ground, you have worms, you have bugs, you have fungus, you have all kinds of other problems. And in the vertical grow towers, you really don't have any of those problems. And so if you have clean water that's filtered, putting it into the grow towers in a very small area, you can grow about 20 times the amount of food in a given area as you could previously with the grow towers. And so that's another line that I am currently marketing on my webpage. But the reason I'm doing this is not just to have something to sell. I don't sell flashlights. I don't sell other products. But this is because this is solving the world energy crisis, and sometimes one house at a time. Sometimes people on a very singular basis decide to become energy and water and food independent, and this is a way to do it. Besides, of course, buying survival food in cans, etc., which is one thing that people do, and that's a very good idea. But for the long term, having a sustainable and marketable product, clean water is marketable. Clean food grown with clean water is marketable. Energy is marketable. So all of these things for the end user are marketable. They can sell electricity to their neighbors. They can charge batteries. They can charge automobiles. They can have a charging station at their farm where people come in and charge up their automobiles from the wind at a given location. So this is the future. And the people who are stuck in the old model of the gasoline automobile, of bringing food from thousands of miles away, heads of lettuce and cucumbers and string beans that are grown thousands of miles away, and then have to be sprayed to keep them, even though they're organic, they're still being sprayed with chemicals to bring them in. That's the old model. The new model is everything grown locally, fresh food, fresh water, clean energy, and then also energy at a scale that is communal, where you have nuclear and coal power plants being replaced by wind generators. And they may not be in the same location because the wind may not blow where the nuclear generators are or the coal-fired plants, but typically they are. It's odd to note that though all of that infrastructure, that distribution of electricity is there with the coal and the nuclear plants and now the natural gas plants, but they're also typically in places where there's good wind. So you have all of that distribution infrastructure already in place. And so these are products that I sell, but that's also solutions that I market for energy, water, and food. And so this is, to my way of thinking, this is very important, and it's taken me decades to get to this point, and it's very important to, for me to be able to have these solutions for the public on a small, medium, and large scale. So I want to jump back to the topic of the myth of alternative energy. The myth of alternative energy, it's a lie that's been propagated by the big energy companies, the big producers like General Electric and Siemens and the American Wind Energy Association, the Canadian Wind Energy Association. And then when the big lie hits reality, when the public wakes up to understanding that, hey, those three-blade wind turbines don't work, they're environmentally damaging, the same with solar, then, doggone it, we'll just have to get back to that good old nuclear and coal power plant power. And so this has been the gig all along. And I talk about this in my 2010 book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, with the special chapter on the myth of alternative energy. And so what I've done is I've superseded all of that and provided a real solution, and that real solution will make it through one of these days. So next week, I'll return back to talking about the history of discoveries on the science and archaeological basis back in the early to mid-2000s. And so we'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. Remember my web pages, jmccsci.com and jmccwaterfilters.com, where you can get a discount. Look at the webpage. It's listed there. Get a nice discount when you make your purchases. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.